The Capital Ideas podcast now has a new monthly edition hosted by Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin. Investment professionals reveal their best mentors, how they find their next great idea, and a few funny stories. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. American Funds Distributors, Inc.
This is the Bloomberg Daybreak Hewitt podcast, available every morning on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen. It's Friday, the 26th of April here in London. I'm Caroline Hepke.
And I'm Stephen Carroll. Coming up today, shares in Alphabet and Microsoft rise as the tech giants impress investors with surging AI demand.
The yen plunges as the Bank of Japan leaves interest rates and bond buying unchanged.
And combining public success with private grief, investor Peter Cowley shares his life lessons as he battles terminal cancer.
Let's start with a roundup of our top stories.
Shares in Microsoft and Alphabet have surged in after-hours trading as the two tech titans released results showing investment in artificial intelligence and cloud computing is paying off. Google's parent company reported first quarter revenue that exceeded analysts' expectations. Sales, excluding partner payouts, rose to $67.6 billion over the period. Chief Financial Officer Ruth Porat says AI services are increasingly fueling growth.
We are very pleased with our financial results for the first quarter, driven in particular by strength in search and cloud, as well as the ongoing efforts to durably re-engineer our cost base.
Ruth Porat added that Google Cloud results reflect broad strength across the industry.
The message was similar at Microsoft, where cloud and artificial intelligence offerings drove quarterly sales and profit growth that beat expectations. Third quarter revenue at the world's most valuable listed company rose 17% to $61.9 billion. Microsoft has leveraged its investment in artificial intelligence pioneer OpenAI to create a series of assistants and other features. And Chief Financial Officer Amy Hood says that they will need to spend more money to keep up with demand.
In FY25, that focus and execution should again lead to double-digit revenue and operating income growth. To scale to meet the growing demand signal for our cloud and AI products, we expect FY25 capital expenditures to be higher than FY24.
As Amy Hood mentioned there, Microsoft is spending heavily to expand its global network of data centers to meet rising demand for AI services. Capital expenditure reached $14 billion during the quarter.
The yen has weakened to a new 34-year low against the dollar after the Bank of Japan held interest rates steady at its latest meeting. The BOJ simplified its language on bond buying, dropping a reference to how much it's purchasing per month. In its economic outlook, the central bank raised its inflation outlook for consumer prices, excluding food, to 2.8% and said risks were skewed to the upside. This is the first meeting since the Bank of Japan raised interest rates out of negative territory.
Airbus will boost production of its advanced A350 jet amidst surging demand while rival Boeing struggles. According to first quarter figures, the European plane maker will produce 12 A350 jets per month by 2028. That's an increase on previous plans to reach 10 by 2026. But CEO Guillaume Faury says that Airbus's supply chain is under pressure as orders from former Boeing customers come in.
So we are victims sort of our own success. We have a lot of demand, the demand is higher than the supply, and this will continue to stretch the supply chain for some years.
Airbus CEO Guillaume Faury speaking there. This week, Indian budget specialist Indigo said that it signed a firm order for 30 A350 aircraft with an option for as many as 70 more.
UK consumer confidence edged higher as inflation has eased and made people more willing to spend. GfK's Household Optimism Index rose 2 points this month to minus 19. Bloomberg's James Wilcock has more.
Things are looking brighter. More willingness to spend on big ticket items, less pessimism and a feeling of financial security. That's what people surveyed told GfK in April, a month in which energy prices and inflation fell. It's likely to be extremely welcome news at number 10 Downing Street. Prime Minister Rishi Sunak is counting on rising optimism about the economy to boost his election hopes. In London, James Wilcock, Bloomberg Radio.
China's top diplomat says that problems are mounting in the country's relationship with the United States. The warning comes after the Biden administration vowed new tariffs on China. Wang Yi spoke via a translator.
The generous relationship is beginning to stabilize. Across the areas, our two sides have increased dialogue, cooperation, and the positive side of the relationship. This is welcomed by our two peoples and the international community. But at the same time, the negative factors in the relationship is still increasing and building. And the relationship is facing all kinds of disruptions.
China's Foreign Minister Wang Yi, speaking via a translator, he is hosting U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken in Beijing. The senior White House official is expected to be challenged over the new U.S. law to ban Chinese-owned TikTok if its parent company ByteDance doesn't divest.
And Israel says it's preparing its forces for a potential all-out war with Hezbollah as the exchange of fire with the Iranian-backed group intensifies. In a statement, the Israeli military said that local leaders in the area have been briefed, quote, on the processes to accelerate readiness for continued fighting. The news comes as Israeli forces struck 40 Hezbollah sites in southern Lebanon on Wednesday after the group conducted a deep aerial attack inside Israel. In a moment, we'll dig into the tech earnings story. We're also going to bring you our exclusive interview with the investor Peter Cowley on his latest book, in which he shares his life lessons as he deals with a terminal cancer diagnosis. We want to dwell for a moment too on today's BOJ decision, the first since they announced their rate rise last month. So they held rates at this meeting, slight tweaks to the language on bond buying, uptick in the inflation outlook for the rest of the year. But the key message seems to be no sign of further easing for now anyway. Blue Edge investors Calvin Yeo describing it as a nothing sushi, a plain white rice ball.
Yes, this is because a lot of Americans use this phrase, a nothing burger, which is also kind of a funny phrase for me. But yeah, I like this one, a nothing sushi. The issue, of course, is, you know, how Japan exits this policy without putting further pressure on the Japanese yen. Businesses are concerned about it. You've got the Japanese economy really kind of faltering at the moment. And so very difficult. Rates are at 0 to 0.1% in Japan. So, you know, trying to lift them above zero, very tricky.
Yeah, indeed. I'm just watching the weakening in the yen this morning. The finance ministry saying they would deal with foreign exchange appropriately, but declined to say whether the currency moves would be what they consider excessive.
Now to those tech earnings. For Microsoft and Google owner Alphabet, their results were all about the corporate customer and a surge in cloud revenue fueled by booming AI services. They needed a strong performance after shares in Meta tumbled on Thursday when the Facebook owner revealed it needed to invest billions more than expected on AI. Joining us now to discuss is Bloomberg anchor Kriti Gupta. Great to see you this morning. Good morning. How good then were Microsoft and Alphabet earnings? Seemed like really they were being very pointed about how well they're doing from AI.
They were, and this is whatever the opposite of a nothing burger is, a swamp burger, if you will. This is the kind of everything and more that you could that they could have delivered. I'll break it down by company here, because one of the concerns for Meta simply was that this is a company that could not capitalize on the AI and was frankly late to the game in a way that Microsoft and Alphabet have really been investing for years and really are already the dominant player. So that's why Meta's extra kind of capital expenditure was a negative. Amid that background, you have to kind of think about why Microsoft and Alphabet are under or outperforming, because you're going in with expectations that, okay, well, maybe the AI returns won't be as juicy. Boy, were we wrong, because for Microsoft especially, which is considered the dominant player in AI right now, especially given their 49% stake in OpenAI as well, their cloud business is getting kind of a tailwind from the AI boom as well. People are really rushing into this. And it's their Asia revenue that we really watch very, very closely. So they gained about 31% in the quarter, which, by the way, massive growth rate. But this follows a little bit of a slowdown that you've seen in the past couple of quarters. The last one was 30% growth in the previous period, 29% before that. And the 29% prediction this time around is crucial as well. So this is coming in the backdrop of concerns that the Asia growth, which, by the way, has been so exponential, could be slowing down. Microsoft saying otherwise. In fact, it also helped their sales. It helped their profit, that the AI story is really working for them and will continue to. That seems to be the message out of Microsoft. Now, Alphabet, on the other hand, is going to be trying to gain a lot of market share, especially in cloud, but also in AI. They've invested heavily in their DeepMind product as well. And by the way, losing some of their talent there to Microsoft, which has been poaching from the DeepMind project as well. For Alphabet, it's a little bit of a different story, because even though they posted some good numbers as well, arguably too good, blood. They also talked about return to shareholders, a first ever cash dividend of about 20 cents from the company, plus a $70 billion stock buyback. Who wouldn't want to touch Alphabet when you put that kind of returns on it?
These companies are also, like Meta, going to need to invest a lot more in AI as well.
They are. And look, this is, I think, where it comes back down to what companies are best positioned to do it. Because any company can kind of use the AI phrasing and say, we're going to hop in on this this trend. But very few have the talent, the infrastructure, and the reach, by the way. So this is where Alphabet's kind of story is really important here as well, is because this is also the second quarter where they've actually been profitable in their AI business. And that's a really big deal. I think the estimate by the analysts was like $621 million. They came out with $900 million. So a pretty decent beat. But the profitability story is important because you can't go to scale, or at least have the kind of backing to go to scale to the mass market, if you don't turn profitable, especially for a company like Alphabet. So this is really helping with that kind of move to get more market share.
Okay, so that on Microsoft and on Alphabet, but it wasn't all good news. The chipmaker Intel gave quite a poor forecast for this year.
They did. This is, of course, the biggest maker of personal computer processors. And we know Intel has been mired in this kind of turnaround story that does not seem to be turning around at any point here. The CEO really trying to look to restore that. Pat Gelsinger, he's been at it for a couple of years now. Well, he says that the sales in the second quarter will be about $13 billion, which are actually coming in slightly less than the average analyst estimate, about $13.6 billion. It also said the profit will be about 10 cents a share versus a projection of about 24 cents. So seeing a real kind of loss when we're talking about how much of that capital expenditure we're seeing. This is, I think, a great way to show that Alphabet, Microsoft can say, hey, we're spending a lot on R&D because we can't deploy an M&A, for example. Intel's actively nearshoring a lot. They're getting a lot of grants from the U.S. government. They're really trying to become more profitable and compete on a bigger stage. And right now, these numbers just show this kind of cash burn isn't really working in their favor.
Kriti Gupta, Bloomberg TV anchor, thanks so much for joining us with the details of those stories.
The Capital Ideas podcast now has a new monthly edition hosted by Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin. Investment professionals reveal their best mentors, how they find their next great idea, and a few funny stories. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. American Funds Distributors, Inc.
Now to a Bloomberg Radio exclusive. The investor Peter Cowley has a third book out. The Cambridge entrepreneur and angel investor is the author of the startup bestseller, the handbook, really, The Invested Investor. Now he's focused not on business, but on his personal story. Public success, private grief. It charts Peter's struggles through alcoholism, the loss of two sons to suicide, and now a terminal cancer diagnosis in his final book, one in which he puts his business career into perspective. I went to Cambridge to meet Peter Cowley for a conversation about his life, the VC business, and loss. I started by asking him what first drew him into his career.
It's the people. I didn't really realize that to start with, but once I got involved and started to have entrepreneurs who are generally about half a generation to a generation younger than me, so and nowadays a generation to a generation and a half, it was the people. It's spending time with those people. A good entrepreneur will listen, because they have to listen to the market, they have to listen to customers, they have to listen to regulators, and sometimes they do listen to investors as well, and they certainly need to listen to staff. So they are passionate and they are willing to learn. So I found that spending time with these people was very invigorating, and of course taught me a lot about things, about technology, about markets, and so I just got pulled into this spending time with interesting people.
You've written this new book, which is much more personal. Tell us about why you wrote the book, and you know, obviously that you've been struck by some of the worst things that happen to people.
As many people say, I seem to have been unlucky compared with most people. So the book is called Public Success, Private Grief. The public success we've just talked about, the private grief is now not so private. So I lost my brother to cancer when he was 21. I lost my sister to alcoholism when she was 51. I lost my first wife, the mother of my children. She died of DVT when she was 51 or 52. I suffer from alcoholism, though I've not had a drink for 24 years sometime next month. I've got late stage cancer. That's what really triggered writing the book. I'll tell you about that in a moment. But the two things that are really are so painful even to talk about, well, to talk about what I'm doing, of course, is the loss of two children. Mm. So I had three boys who were 2 years apart. My middle son died when he was 23, and my younger son died, who helped with a book project, died when he was 34 a couple of years ago.
And it's almost unimaginable pain.
It is, exactly. If you've got any children, anybody who's listening to this got children, don't go there. Don't think about it. And then I was diagnosed with late stage four, non-smoking lung cancer. So one in five lung cancer sufferers haven't smoked. And unfortunately, we're the people who don't. Is not detected till quite late. So it was all over my body, my brain, lots of places in the body when it was detected. So that happened at the end of 21, and then Alan died at the end of 22. And because I've written stuff before, and I'm sure I've helped a lot of people, a lot of entrepreneurs, a lot of people in the charity sector over the time, I was sort of just felt there was another book in me, basically, but not a book in the sense of the other two, which are business books, a book that is personal, very personal and inspirational. And because, I don't know, I come from Yorkshire, I've always been very direct, almost too direct, I'm sure. I've just decided to open it all. So I've written a book which is basically a memoir.
What do you hope the message is? Who do you hope is going to read the book? And also, what do you think that people are going to learn from it? Because, I mean, I think the title of the book sort of expresses it, you know, very, very well. And I think that people listening maybe who are facing these sorts of struggles, whatever they may be, what are they going to be able to take in terms of inspiration or just kind of the will to go on?
It's just inspiration for getting on with life, not sweating the small stuff, as the Americans say, you know, just grasping, you know, doing the stuff that you might not be around tomorrow to achieve.
Is it the to-do list? I mean, it seems so terribly VC to say, I'm going to make a business plan and I'm going to make the best of this awful situation. Is that the bottom line?
That's one of it. And I have both what I call my bucket list, which we've all heard of, and I also have a list. And you can probably imagine...
Might not be able to put that on radio.
Okay. I also have an effort list.
Yes.
So this, of course, is things that I don't want to do any longer. They're things that I would have done before that, you know...
What are a few of those?
Well, even things like speaking at events, like mentoring people, like talking to entrepreneurs. There's a lot of things I just think, no.
Don't want to do it anymore? Why not?
Well, it's because I haven't got that long left. Because, unfortunately, because it's stage four, I do know that from the research that it's unlikely that I live past the end of this year. Now, this is statistical, of course, but you know the statistical mean. Half is already before that date and half afterwards. And so something could happen even during 2024. So, yeah, getting on with things. I mean, there's a number of lessons in the book. It isn't just that. There's a number of business lessons even in the book. It's not a self-help, which we did think about doing. It's a memoir which has got a description in there so that people can read and hopefully work out from their own circumstances, which might have to do with something else. It may be just business failure. They can maybe even from that and the process of the business failing learn how to cope with their own character and not disappear into a well of grief.
I also, as a parent myself, it is the horrifying bit of losing children is so awful. How you dealt personally with that in the aftermath.
We couldn't have had this conversation within 3 months of his death. I just wouldn't have been able to talk about it without ending up in not being able to speak, in fact. Obviously I grieve and miss both sons tremendously. But life, I need to get on with my life, you know, I need to, it bubbles up sometimes, it hasn't bubbled up during this interview, but it could easily have done. And part of it, of course, is not so much the busyness, but giving back, and this book is about that, it's about trying to help other people. I haven't really answered your question, but that's because I don't really know in the end. I'm just not sure how I've coped. There isn't a magic wand to coping with tragedies. And I don't think it's because I'm a cold creature that just buries it or ignores it or my skin shell's so thick. I think I really have sort of been lucky. I've had the right assistance at the right time. And I had something to redirect my grief and my addiction into, which has been positive benefit.
Yeah. A lot of our audience, they're very young. And they're in the city and they're in financial services and it's all about making money. Mm. And I don't know, I think you've had experience in that world of trying to make it, you know, that kind of really the drive of trying to build your own business, trying to do well. It's not exactly the same, I think, as being in financial services in the city, kind of being in VC. But I suppose what would you say to those people about the point of the money making?
Yeah. Money isn't the be-all and end-all. We all know that. I mean, even that your listeners will know that in principle. It would be really great if they are in the city and they stay in there. They get to the point at, say, the age of 35, they back out, and then they use that money and the time for something else. You know, going to teaching, help charities with time as well as money, etc. I've had customers in the city, so I've spent time with people in the city, and it is pretty frantic lifestyle. This isn't a rehearsal. Life is not a rehearsal. We all know that. That's very hackneyed, isn't it? Enjoy life in some way. Get the balance right between personal life and work life. And I definitely got it wrong.
So that was Peter Cowley, the angel investor and co-founder of UK-based VC Martlett Capital, speaking to me at his home in Cambridge about his book, Public Success, Private Grief, written with his wife. It is out now. That conversation has really stayed with me in the weeks since I met Peter and since we went up to Cambridge to have that conversation. I just thought it was so impactful and so powerful what he had to say.
I mean, it's my first time hearing it, as our listeners would have been as well. And I think the thing that strikes me is that he speaks so lucidly about what he's taken away from everything that he's been through and that he really has come out of it with a philosophy about what he can do, even though he's talking about having very limited time left.
Yeah, and look, it took him about 2 minutes just to list super rapid fire all of the successes, all of the businesses that he had invested in. He said at one point he had 27 different roles. So, you know, he's just done so much in his business career, as you say. You know, he's done so much in the charitable sector as well, and so many sort of important ideas. I mean, he also even talked about the UK government and politics, and I took away from that also, you know, he didn't want to give me a list of what Britain should be doing in terms of growing venture capital companies or economic growth. He actually said that what Britain needs to focus on is fairness, which again I just thought was incredibly interesting. His views then on how to deal with adversity, balancing those work achievements and frankly the luck that you need to have a little bit in life. Peter Cowley speaking to Bloomberg Radio.
This is Bloomberg Daybreak Europe, your morning brief on the stories making news from London to Wall Street and beyond.
Look for us on your podcast feed every morning on Apple, Spotify and anywhere else you get your podcasts.
You can also listen live each morning on London DAB Radio, the Bloomberg Business app and Bloomberg.com.
Our flagship New York station is also available on your Amazon Alexa devices. Just say, Alexa, play Bloomberg 1130. I'm Caroline Hepke.
And I'm Stephen Carroll. Join us again tomorrow morning for all the news you need to start your day, right here on Bloomberg Daybreak Europe.
What could you do if your data was working for you and not against you? With Bloomberg delivering enterprise data directly to your systems, you get easy access to the details you want, optimized for higher level analysis, and financial data experts committed to helping you maximize your every move. Our data is made for more, so you can show the world what you're made of. Visit Bloomberg.com/enterprise data to learn more.